It's Learning to Listen with Quinn, Naomi, and Charlie.
Yeah. Hello. Welcome to L2L podcast, also known as Learning to Listen. Today, we're going to be talking all about number 80 on our Rolling Stones greatest albums of all time. It's Nevermind the Bollocks. Here's the Sex Pistols. But before we do that, make sure you check out our Patreon. And thank you, everybody who's been supporting us so far. If you like what we do and you want to support us, please help us out. Go to patreon.com/learningtolisten. Not only do you get all the episodes early, but hey, this one even has an extra 30 minutes of content. So make sure you head on over to patreon.com/learningtolisten. This is L2L. We're talking about music and the way we listen to music. We're trying to engage with the music we listen to. We're all about the lost art of engaged listening. So that's why we're talking about albums and consuming the album as a whole artistic statement, the way artists intended. This is not a biography show. This is something else. No, this is where we just make a pure guttural and visceral reactions to the music we are listening to. So I am your host, Quinn Clark. With me, as always, are my co-hosts. I've got Lazy Sod, Charlie Scream.
Charlie Scream.
Right on, right on. And of course, still hanging in tough forever, Naomi Carmack. Naomi?
I'm jacked.
Oh yeah, Naomi, why is that?
The Vanga bus is coming, folks. The Vanga bus is coming.
I feel like that's a sly reference to your Dope Nostalgia podcast.
I don't know why that came out of my mouth here, but yeah.
Who knows? Great. I think Charlie's just like, I think he's going over to your podcast now and just like cherry picking these drops, seeing what he can get from there. Okay, guys, today we are talking about Rolling Stones' 100 greatest albums of all time, according to their top 500 list from 2012, amended in 2020. Like I said, today's album is The Sex Pistols, Nevermind the Bollocks. Here's The Sex Pistols. So, you guys want to hear all about this album?
Please do tell.
So, number 80 on our Rolling Stone list, Nevermind the Bollocks, Here's The Sex Pistols, is the only studio album by English punk rock band The Sex Pistols, released on the 28th of October 1977 by Virgin Records in the UK and on the 11th of November 1977 by Warner Bros. Records in the US. The album has influenced many bands and musicians and the industry in general. In particular, the album's raw energy and Johnny Rotten's sneering delivery and half-singing are often considered game-changing. It is frequently listed as the most influential punk album and one of the most important and best albums of all time. Okay, guys, here we go. Who's heard of this album before?
I have heard of this album before.
I assume we've all heard of the album before.
A couple songs.
Just a couple songs. So Naomi, do you know the album, that you've heard the album, the name of the album reference before?
No, but I've heard a couple of the songs and I am actually totally shocked that they only had one studio album.
Okay.
When you said that, I'm like, what?
Okay. Well, I'm surprised to hear that you weren't like, if somebody had said, like, if you had to name the one and only Sex Pistols album, you couldn't say Nevermind the Bollocks.
No. Nope.
That's interesting. Because I feel like
I don't like punk music.
Oh, that's so okay. All right. Fair enough.
So I have no idea what's going on with that.
Yeah, but like this is kind of beyond like punk music, right? This is I don't mean the album, like we'll get into that. I just mean like its presence in the zeitgeist of the larger musical universe.
It's a bigger cultural moment.
I've heard of the Sex Pistols.
Okay, fair enough. I would just think
as much as I knew.
Because to me, this album and the Sex Pistols are synonymous, right? Like,
yeah.
But I'll get into that in a minute. Charlie.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you've heard of this album before.
Yeah, absolutely. I have.
Yeah.
You want me to tell you more about it or something?
Well, give me a second. I was just going to say. So, okay. I already assumed that. I think I knew that about you. Of course, I would put myself in that same boat. We can definitely assume Naomi has never listened to this album all the way through.
Yes.
Mm-mm.
So And Charlie, I'm guessing you've listened to this album all the way through.
Plenty.
I'm correct?
Correct.
Okay. Well, maybe, I don't know. Give me your experience with this record.
This would have been one of the two main records that would have been my introduction to punk rock and, you know, the kind of punk rock that I love. So okay,
what's the other one?
It would have been this, and it would have been the Misfits. Like a bigger compilation of a good chunk of their work, because they never really did a lot of proper albums.
Yeah, they're in a similar boat. They've been together in another version or other, but yeah they were mostly a singles, and then
so like a compilation of
like
their
Walk
stuff.
Among Us and Static Age and stuff like that are essentially compilations.
This was definitely, you know, this was big. This was a big one for me because it was like, yeah, this is called punk rock. Here you go. Check it out.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. I mean, yeah. This album is something I had definitely listened through in my youth. It's kind of interesting to me because I was never a big Sex Pistols fan, just as far as in the context of my discovery of punk rock goes. To me, they were so slow.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah. British,
right?
That even though I appreciated them for what they were, and I put them, you know, I gave them props for where they belong in the echelon, of in the canon, so to speak, of punk rock and punk rock aesthetic. You know, I was like, but that's grandpa's punk rock in a way, you know, even though I'm a big Ramones fan, and I would say Ramones are kind of contemporaries.
Right.
You know, like there's a lot of debate about, you know, who came first and what came first and stuff like that. And I think it's kind of silly. I think they're two scenes that developed kind of independent of each other. And then just because they did influence each other too. The Ramones, you know, toured the UK at a time when the Sex Pistols were in utero, so to speak. Right. Sure. You know, so, you know, famously the Sex Pistols went to go see the Ramones and that sort of stuff. But I mean, there was bands like The Damned and stuff like that before the Sex Pistols and the Ramones. And then, you know, there's your proto-punk bands, right? So I don't think today we should get into that debate much at all. I think we should just react to this album. But but there is some context that does need to be said about its time and place. For me personally, though, my introduction was junior high. I had a student teacher. So looking back, I realized that student teachers are usually relatively young. Like they're usually in their early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
To me, though, at the time, somebody in their 20s, even if they were like 20, 21, 22, who was still an adult when you're like 14, 15, right?
But they're like a cool adult.
Yeah. Well, we were getting ready for a battle of the bands. And everybody, this is a time when like bands like The Offspring and Green Day were really blown up, you know, like that kind of like 93, 94 to, you know, era where, you know, Nirvana had gotten really big and, you know, there's only so many so-called grunge bands to go around and they're all signed, all the good ones anyway. So now they're going looking for any band that kind of plays kind of thrashy, fast and three chord like rock, you know, so a lot of these bands were now coming, you know, to prominence in the mainstream. And of course, being in junior high, those are the bands we totally just gravitated towards instantly. And I had a student teacher who noticed us all talking about like how, you know, oh, let's do this Green Day song or let's do this Offspring song for this battle of the bands, right? And he's like, you know, it's funny, you guys keep using this word punk rock.
I do. Like, I don't think you know what it means.
I don't think you know what it means. And he was pretty cool. I wish I could remember his name. I wish I had this tape, but I think it got passed around amongst me and my friends and I have no idea where it ended up. But he made us a mixtape of Ramones, Misfits, like Sex Pistols. I think there's some Black Flag on there. Like he gave us like, here is your introduction to like this. This is it. This is what punk rock really is. And it was the first time I heard like, and he put like the songs that you would expect. He put like Blitzkrieg Bop. He put Anarchy in the UK, you know, that sort of stuff on there.
Sure.
And I just remember playing like some Sonic the Hedgehog and like listening to this fucking, like it probably sounded like shit too. It was taped off of other tapes, you know, but If I can remember that guy's name, I want to call him like Mr. G. I think we probably just called him Mr. G or whatever. So like, salute to you, sir. You definitely broadened our horizons. So of course, years later, you know, with my library card, I took this album out. And by that point though, I had already started listening to other bands that were in the punk rock, you know, by this point, by the time I had sat down and listened to this album proper, I was already listening to like a lot of the, you know, California pop punk, like bands like NOFX. And, you know, I was probably getting into some ska music by this point or whatever. And there's two things that definitely hit me about this album the first time I listened to it through. And first I was like, for its era, like for from whence it came, you know, like when I compared it to things like the Misfits and the Ramones, I was like, this is too polished.
Yeah.
I was like, to me, there was already a little bit of a like a this is too shiny.
Right.
This is too shiny, man. Like, there's money behind this. Like, production's supposed to sound a little bit like shit, right? Like, that's, you know, it's supposed to sound like it was like made in like somebody's fucking bedroom or something like that, right? With no budget. That's part of the, you know, DIY aesthetic of punk rock, right? Like, you know, and then on top of that, I was like, and it's so slow, right? Because I wanted my punk songs to be like, you know, like a fucking million beats per second, like,
yeah.
And even the Ramones back then were playing songs twice as fast or three times as fast as anything on this album. So, I mean, other than going like, okay, I know the references, I know the songs, I've heard the album, I never really went back to that well too much. I was always just kind of like, yeah, okay, I get it. I get it. These guys had their moment and their thing or whatever, and I moved on. So it was kind of cool to go back and listen to it now, being a little older, a little wiser, a little more mature, and like really kind of understanding.
A little more mature, but not a lot more mature.
No, a little, very little.
Just a tiny bit.
But the reason I bring that up or whatever is it's like being surprised, Naomi, that you're like, you know who the Sex Pistols are, but you couldn't identify this album or whatever. Is to me, I was just thinking, I'm like, the Sex Pistols are less of a band and or an album and more of just kind of an event. It's like a time and space, like a happening, a thing that happened. And that's why it was a one and done sort of thing, because it couldn't go on. It wasn't never meant to go on. It was meant to completely encapsulate a spirit, a feeling, a time and place. And I think it does it perfectly. If you want to get yourself into the mindset of a teenager in London in the late 70s,
yeah,
and you want to know what was going on, this is probably the best time capsule, you know?
Like, yeah.
This is it. That's what when I was listening to it, it almost felt like ingesting like history, like, you know, like musically. We can get into musically how it holds up, but I'm like, man, this is almost a historical document.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I can see that. I'm sitting here looking at wiki stuff on the side because I'm going, I've heard the name Sid Vicious, I've heard the names Johnny Rotten, I've heard these guys of them, and I knew that they were important to punk, but I had no idea, first of all, that they were in the same band.
Oh, no way.
Okay.
No, I didn't know that. And then I'm kind of like, I've heard of the whole Sid and Nancy thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So I'm picturing like this Bonnie and Clyde type story or something like that. Ooh, I'm sitting here reading the murder of Nancy Spungen and going, holy shit.
Yeah. Have you wow. ever seen the movie Sid and Nancy?
I heard of it. So, okay. But I didn't know the story. So I'm reading through their story and I'm like, wow.
Well, man,
crazy.
To give you some 90s context to it. Courtney Love obsessed over Nancy Spungen and was like famously always trying to like copy her style, kind of embody her. She like auditioned hard to play Nancy Spungen, even though she wasn't really an actress. I think she did manage to get herself a small role in like as an extra or something in the Sid and Nancy movie. But like look into Sid and Nancy a little bit more and you might understand a little bit of Courtney Love's psychology.
Whole thing.
I would say, you know, like she's gone on and maybe matured or not. I don't know, however you feel about her, but But like where Courtney Love was getting her idea of like her identity for herself was apparently greatly based on her idealism of Nancy Spungen. But like, yeah, no. Sid Vicious, interestingly enough, though, he's a later addition of the Sex Pistols. He came on to tour this album and not, he was no part of this album.
Really?
No, I mean, I think there's one or two of his bass tracks.
Nope, zero. He did not play bass on any of this album. In fact, the original bass player for the Sex Pistols was let go early in the making of this record, and he's only on one track. All the bass play parts were... Now, there's... Okay, so Glenn... God, what's his name? It's Glenn... shit, why can't I remember Glenn's name?
Glenn Matlock.
Who played all the guitars on this album. He claims he played all the bass on every song except for Anarchy in the UK. Anarchy in the UK was recorded by EMI as the single for this album. And then because of there was so much controversy around this band, that EMI famously dropped them. They got picked up by Virgin. This is, you know, in the early days of Virgin, right? And then they even finished the album with the same producer in the same studio and everything. But then they wrote the song EMI to stick it to the label that that dropped them because they couldn't handle the controversy.
It's an old school diss track.
It is. It's a very old school.
One of two big old school diss tracks on this album.
Yeah. And very catchy.
Yeah.
Is the other diss track the Queen?
No. I mean, I guess if you want to say that, but a couple of diss tracks like that. Which one was it? It was New York, which is basically a diss track about the New York Dolls' David Johansen.
Oh.
Yeah, they didn't like him.
All right.
I mean, so I know that Sid Vicious was not a good bass player when, you know, like at the start of everything or whatever, and... he wasn't on this album very much, but I think he's on at least like he's on two tracks.
Okay. Glenn Matlock says no.
Well, bring him up. Glenn, let's talk about
it. And the fact that Sid Vicious can't play the bass might have something to do with that. Sid Vicious was not picked to be in this band because he could play an instrument. Sid Vicious was picked because he fit the look.
Sure.
So here's the thing about the Sex Pistols that Naomi, I think, might tie into some of your interests. That if there's one big criticism of this band, it's that for everything they stand for, they're kind of manufactured.
That's true.
So famously, their manager, Malcolm McLaren, is a guy who owned a clothing shop in London where these kids hung out.
Yeah, but not just a clothing shop, but like an S&M clothing shop.
Getting to that, Charlie.
I'm sorry. I jumped ahead.
The clothing shop was literally called Sex.
Yeah.
And this is where a lot of the kids in that London scene were picking up a lot of their fashion because, you know, like the Sex Pistols didn't invent punk rock fashion. They just brought it to the masses, right? Once they became a big... So Malcolm McLaren just saw these kids and he was a young guy himself at the time, right? I don't know where he had the money to support his shop, but his shop was essentially a shop full of not only trendy clothes for kids, but S&M clothing, bondage gear, that sort of thing. It was the idea of this, like, you know, that's what I mean by when you talk about this album as kind of being a historical document, right? Is it like it encompasses all this anti-fashion fashion, this complete rejection of, like, you know, these are kids who wanted to get away from, like, you know the 60s and the hippies, and they even reference it here. It's like, you know, long hair and flared trousers, as they call them, right? Or flares or whatever they say in the album. Like, yeah, get rid of that. Nobody wants, like, you know, nobody wants that fucking hippie shit, right? These guys started putting on tight bondage pants and leather and safety pins and chains and you know, and that sort of thing. And so, you know, this band was generally, you know, a couple of guys that were friends hanging out, learning their instruments. You know, Malcolm took a liking to them, thought, yo, maybe I could, you know, help this band become a thing. He's the one who recruited Johnny Rotten, you know, John Linden, because he was like, oh, this guy would make a perfect frontman. Not because he could sing, not because he had any predilection to be in a band, but he just met this snotty kid who was just a complete, like, utter fucking, like, in your face. And he just was like, oh, delicious. He's your frontman now, you know? And so later on, when the original bass player was let go, that's when they brought Sid Vicious in. Not because he could play, because he could fit the look and the lifestyle or whatever, right? And he sued it to a T, so much so that he was a little too genuine, and strung out on heroin, almost definitely murdered his girlfriend, and then OD'd a few days later.
Yeah, so basically what you're saying is they're an old school boy band.
Yeah, together. They're kind of the original boy band. Well, not the original, but, like, you know, they're a boy band in their way.
Yeah.
They were picked for their personalities, not for necessarily for their talent. Right?
He's the outrageous one, and he's the druggy one.
Yeah, he's the mouthpiece, and, you know. Which one do you think loved their mother? whose favorite food is pizza?
That's right.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because the talent came later. The idea of, like, getting these guys, like, together. And obviously, you heard the record. Like, there's some synergy there. They figured it out. I mean, how much they wrote these songs themselves. They're credited for writing these songs. They worked on them in a studio, or they worked on them in a rehearsal space. They went and played live shows. They built up a reputation and a following, and then they got signed and got to go make a record. And then, of course, they got dropped. But, you know, another label that was like, well, you know, we're the new hot thing in town and we need to take a chance. Like, this band already has so much publicity behind them. It would be a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. Just because these guys don't want to handle, like, the heat, whatever. We'll jump in that kitchen. And so Virgin comes along and
swoops them up.
And yeah, I don't know exactly what the numbers on the record selling are, but as far as a legacy album goes, this is probably a great investment. It still sells to this day.
Well, I'm pretty sure it hit gold pretty quickly, even though it was boycotted by a bunch of radio stations. And when it was supposed to be in the top 10, they would just, like, just because of the name, they would just leave the space blank. So, and, you know, there were definitely radio stations that were refusing to play it. So even throughout that controversy, or the whole controversy or whatever, it still managed to come out super strong. Started off gold and ended up, I'm pretty sure, at least platinum once, if not many times.
Yeah, well, I mean, man, famously, though, like, they had a couple of publicity stunts attached to this record that went over, like, huge. I mean, we were talking earlier in the pre-podcast about Peasant Vision and Before Cable and stuff like that. And so imagine in the UK, where you literally only have, like, BBC sanctioned, like, channels to watch. And after they had been signed by EMI, I believe they may have released a single, Anarchy in the UK, or they were just releasing it for publicity for the single. They went on what was called the Today Show. And what was his name? I think it was Bill Grundy. You can look this up. It's famous. It's all over YouTube. Look up Sex Pistols, Today Show, Bill Grundy. And they go on there and they're just complete utter turds to this guy, like, on purpose, just snotty, snotty, snotty kids who don't respect him at all. And they start, you know, swearing at him and telling him to slug off. And he's like, well, have at it, have another one. They're like, you fucking rotten, dirty bastard. You know, it's like, okay, now listen, we might look at that and be like, these petulant little punks, like, you know, like, as adults or whatever. But imagine you're, like, you're a teenager, you're a kid, and your mom's favorite, like, talk show, maybe you get to see a band, you know, an upcoming, I don't know who would be playing on the Today Show at the time, like, probably, like, the fucking Bay City Rollers or something, right? Going S-A-T-U-R-D-A-Y night, right? And, you know, they're gonna have a pleasant little sit down, they're gonna talk about their favorite food and how much they love their moms or something like that, and this band comes on and they fucking, not only do they just take the piss out of this guy, like, but they swear on television, like, a lot. I don't know about you, but, like, there'd be no getting me back on the farm.
I'm with these guys. I got to go.
Yeah, I'd see you later, Mom. I'd be spiking my hair, making it all colorful. I'd be putting on fucking bondage pants. I'd be out of there. So I can see, like, you know, kids at that point too, like, they've just been exposed to this, all the publicity it got. It was making headlines in the newspaper. This isn't like your local pub band, you know, like, that's doing okay and getting a following. These guys were like out for blood, you know, man. They were like winning fans hard, and especially in the, you know, like, what better than something that really upsets your parents?
That's right.
Right. Especially in this era too. Like, okay, if you think about the politics and like just the atmosphere of like the UK and London and in the late 70s, you know, like, they're going into an era of real, like, conservatism, you know,
Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know at what point, if they're in the Falklands yet, but you know, they're going to be talking to, like, you know, pointless war, economic decline. Like, these kids really mean it when they're singing about, like, no future. They mean it. They don't see, like, there's no jobs for them. No, none. Right. They're not going to get, they're not going to find employment, like, you know, what can they? So yeah, this is it. Nihilism, fuck it. The only meaning they're going to find in life is, like, to fucking throwing the idea of meaning of out the window, right? You know, I completely genuinely buy these lyrics and stuff like that when you think about that at that point. And throughout the 80s and whatnot too, like, you know, they were almost prophetic. They were right. You know, it was a very rough time, especially for young people in the UK. And, you know, not that I'm all that well versed on the economics of the United Kingdom through the 80s and 90s, but, you know, from all the other movies and TV shows and documentaries I've watched, you know, it seems like, yeah, these guys were just, they were right at the precipice of all that. And they were letting it be known, you know, this is how they felt.
It's funny because, yeah, so going back and listening to this album, because I haven't listened to it for a while, and then even just referencing it, you know, in one space of time, in place and time, but then thinking about something like episodes of The Crown or something like that, right? Where in the song God Save the Queen came out, was released in 1977, which is also the same year of Queen Elizabeth's 25th anniversary Silver Jubilee thing. So, you know, you can kind of look at the two things and see, I mean, they don't talk about the Sex Pistols in The Crown, obviously, but, like, they show, you know, a little bit of dramatization of that, the kind of shit that was going down then with the no jobs and, you know, everyone's freaking out and worried and shit like that. Right. So it's fun. It's neat to think about it. Put those two things next to each other kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Totally.
Yeah. Anyway, we haven't really talked about the actual production about the album yet. One of the things that really hit me on this listen through, like, with new ears and new fresh ears and, like, a new appreciation for the kind of production, that kind of turned me off when I first heard it as a kid, because I wanted more of my, like, DIY punk rock. You know?
Wanted it dirtier.
Well, from that era, like, I was listening to bands that could really pull off, like, you know, a good studio sound, but I was expecting it more because I was like, yeah, new technology and, like, the ability. I'm like what they had access to. It'd be like, you know, like, now you can make whole fucking well-produced albums, like, on a laptop in your bedroom if you want. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, you know, so now when I think DIY, I don't necessarily think it needs to sound like shit. But back then I was like, for credibility, especially from punk rock. Right. You know, I was expecting that, but this listen through this time, I found a new appreciation for that, for just how big the sound is.
Mm.
Like, how well layered the guitar sound is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how you can tell that the way they tracked the guitars was that they would double track the rhythm tracks. They would record one guitar for the left channel, one guitar for the right channel. He's just playing the same thing, but just that slight variation in the two tracks or whatever just gives you this wide stereo pan, and the guitar sounds so big. And then there's just these little embellishments in the rhythm where, like, a cleaner version of a big power chord being played relentlessly on those other rhythm tracks comes through, and it really helps, like, clean up that distinction of, like, what's happening in the song, where the changes are. And one thing I appreciated about what I thought was a slow tempo at the time now is just how well that helps drive the music and the message home. Mm-hmm. Like, I actually found this a little more driving, I think, now than I would have if it was just like a fast album. If this was like a hardcore record from a few years later, I was like, man, you know what though? In a crowd, in a big stadium or something, I don't know. These guys probably never got to play a stadium, you know? Like, famously, the last thing they ever really did as a band, Wisted, Vicious, and Toe, was go on this completely, just what's the word I'm looking for? You know, they went on this tour of the United States that was just, come help me out, guys. It was a bad.
It was a mess.
Bad things happened. It was a mess. It was just a complete
real fucking shit show.
Yeah, train wreck of a tour. Or
clusterfuck.
Yeah, I don't know, all those. Think of anyway, but how well this sound, and how many bands since then have probably copied this sound. You know, well, I know for sure that a lot of bands have, right? Mm-hmm. But just how well it holds up. It sounds good and almost modern, you know, in its production to this day.
It doesn't sound dated. I mean, obviously the references and things like that sound dated, but like just the musicality of it, like the sounds, they sound super crisp, super clean. And nothing sounds overproduced or anything weird.
Yeah, it doesn't get muddied. Yeah, and I think part of that is the tempo. The tempo being kind of like, it's not slow. It's not like
the whole album is like a mid-tempo album.
Yeah.
It starts off with the boots, right? The beat of the boots, and it basically doesn't let up.
Yeah. It's like, you know, I found myself like bopping, you know, like I was listening back to this. I listened probably a handful of times. I don't know how many times, and every time I did, I was like, this tempo is kind of, I don't know, maybe I'm just getting older or something, but like, obviously this worked for kids in the late 70s, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they were, I don't know. I don't know what kids were doing specifically. If like, this was the birth of slam dancing and stuff like that, I'm guessing that kids at Sex Pistols shows were getting pretty aggressive and throwing each other around. Right. Like, you know, I don't know, you know, I don't know where the genesis of moshing specifically was, but I can 100% picture kids doing it to this, like, no problem, right?
Sure.
But I was like, you know what, there was something about keeping the tempo like in the mid tempo range that really helped that the driving rhythm like kind of breathe and pulse in a way that I was like, man, it really lets the guitar shine, even though he's not doing anything to blow anybody's mind. But that was also kind of part of the point, was like, you know, like they were like kind of, you know, like fuck Pink Floyd and fuck, you know, like Led Zeppelin, fuck all these like bands, you know, that you have to fucking pack a lunch to go listen to their guitar solo, right? Like, I'm pretty sure in the anecdote of Malcolm McLaren finding Johnny Rotten, it was because he was wearing a t-shirt that said like fuck Pink Floyd or I hate Pink Floyd or something, right? Like, and he was like, oh, I gotta go talk to this kid. You know, this kid's the right kid, you know, for my project here.
Yeah.
But you know, and it's like, these are, you know, these songs, they're still pretty poppy, upbeat, major chord songs,
right? Yeah.
You know, like it's funny, there's an exuberance in their nihilism. You know, it's like, it's more about taking the piss out of everything than it is about, like, you know, they want to tear it down, but it's like they're gonna have a blast doing it, you know?
Right.
Yeah. And yeah, I don't know, it works so well. Then you've got Johnny Rotten's vocals. And at no point is he ever trying to be, you know, I don't know, like, he's not crooning, right? But I think it works. His, I don't know, his half singing, you know, that he really leans into his accent. And then every once in a while, just to put a little nice little period on the end of a sentence, he rolls one of those in there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're so pretty. Oh, so pretty. They can't. But here's one thing I have to give him that always kind of bugged me, but now I'm kind of, maybe I'm coming around a little, I'm not sure. Well, what do you guys think? You notice how he forces so many rhymes that don't rhyme?
He just kind of, you know, just kind of crowbars it in there.
Yeah, like he'll just twist a word or a pronunciation.
But I mean, I think that's also part of the whole fuck you, right? You're like, what, you want rhyming structure? No, fuck that.
Well, famously on Anarchy in the UK, or the very first line, he rhymes Antichrist with anarchist.
Yeah.
Those don't rhyme. Those don't rhyme at all.
Who says they have to?
He makes them work, you know, because he is an antichrist.
But I was definitely this time paying a bit more attention to some of the phrasing and things like that, like kind of reading along with the lyrics and things. And I was like, I never really noticed that, you know, certain phrases were what they were until you read it as well as hear it in your ears, right? So it's like, yeah, okay, that's cool. I like the way he did that. If you would have read it off of a piece of paper otherwise, it would have sounded quite different, you know?
Naomi, I want to ask you a few questions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so first we got away from the boy band thing, but do you think would these guys count as a boy band? You manufactured, put together by a manager, picked for their personalities over their ability to play or sing. Although then again, I don't know. Sometimes boy bands, I guess, are picked on their. You got to be able to sing to be in a boy band.
Yeah, I don't agree with you when you say that for the reasons they're always picked.
Yeah, but you got to say maybe there's the boy bands that are picked more for talent, but there's definitely the ones that are manufactured out of
I would say
they still got to be able to pass an audition of being able to have actual talent to get into the group.
Right. But isn't it oftentimes where if you have a group of like four or five, you have like three really good singers and then one who's like the personality.
Yeah.
Except here it's like more personality. They're like picked for personality over raw talent. So it's just kind of like the reverse. Yeah.
Okay, maybe they're not like a New Kids or a Backstreet Boys. Maybe these guys are more of a Monkees.
Yeah.
Right? Like the Monkees were all picked not for their ability to play or sing per se, although they did have some of that talent, but they were picked to be actors on a TV show.
Right.
And to fulfill certain roles. So, you know, it's interesting to me that in a movement where the idea is authenticity and like fuck your glamour, fuck your fashion, all that sort of stuff. It's like, there's an irony to it still where they're still kind of the Monkees in their way. Right. It kind of reminded me, you know, and this is so funny. I like, you know, years ago when Avril Lavigne was still really big. And I remember one time if she meant this tongue in cheek or not, but in an interview with like Much Music or whatever, so they asked her about like, oh, you know, how do you feel? You kind of started a fad, like you wear this like loose tie, and now we see a lot of girls, you know, wearing loose ties. And she's like, yeah, I'm kind of the Sid Vicious of fashion. And to me, I thought that was A, hilarious, and B, I used to use it as evidence that Avril Lavigne is the most punk rock of all. Because if the idea of punk rock is to be subversive, then being subversive to punk rock is the most subversive, like you can be, or the most punk rock you can be.
It's leveled up punk rock, yeah.
Yeah. So therefore, Avril Lavigne kind of dismissing punk rock so flippantly as being like, it's yeah, like fuck it, like I'm the Sid Vicious of fashion, makes her more punk rock than anybody who would actually take like a comment like that seriously.
She's the punk rock of punk rock.
She's the punk rock of punk rock. So, you know, I just, to me, the idea of like this anti-fashion, you know, is so funny, because what is anti-fashion? It's still fashion. Mm-hmm. So it's not anti-fashion at all.
It's a different.
It's more fashion. It's just different fashion.
An alternative.
Mm-hmm. It's just subversive to what would be considered normal fashion at the time. But then if the idea is to be subversive, then it'd be funny that if like, say if instead of hiring Sid Vicious to play bass, they just got some long-haired hippie and flared trousers, as they would say, to like come and play bass. That would be even more punk rock. Anyway, I kind of got off on a tangent there. But
I got a question though for Naomi.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you make it through the whole album?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah,
I did.
Well, okay. Go ahead.
I mean, when the album starts off, like the first couple tracks, I was like, these aren't too bad. Like, I mean, this isn't as annoying as I thought it would be. But then that being said, I was still really annoyed through the entire album.
Okay, well, I want to ask you, I got away from it, but I was going to ask you the next question because we had been talking about Johnny Rotten's vocals. Now, I mean, you're picky sometimes about your vocal performances.
Mm-hmm.
But I've noticed that you do give people leeway if there's like, you know, sometimes if they lean into a performance over technicality, if their delivery is like, you know, suits the music or the song or whatever.
Yeah. And they're selling the lyric and it's about the emotion of the song and all of that. Sure.
Yeah. Now, in this case, how did you feel about that?
Oh, he's definitely got a uniqueness to him, but it's really irritating to listen to. Like all the things you were saying, I like, sure. Like the rhyming and stuff. I found that quirky and funny how he's creating rhymes that don't exist. But I mean, like just listening to some of the noises he makes in songs, like that one about the lazy sod. Like his voice is so fucking annoying to me.
Now is part of that, the kind of snotty, like teenage, like almost like talking back to his, like there is a level of sarcasm that never leaves his voice in this entire album. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that is in a way is because like there's some heavy topics on this album, like the very second song in
Bodies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is a song about abortion. And I think the delivery on that song, like when you just look at the lyrics out of context, it's like, whoa, what is he saying? Like, is he comparing people who have abortions to animals? Like he's, you know, and it's like, I don't think that he does. I don't think he means that. I think, you know, what he's trying to convey is more of a sense of the way, you know, people, like he's just trying to show you this, like I don't know. God, this is tricky. this is a heavy subject.
Oh, so. You're doing good. Just swing for it.
Well, okay. I'm not going to try to swing for anything. I want to treat the subject with sensitivity, but I just want to talk about his delivery about it and what, like when you take the lyrics out of context, they look like one thing, but then when you hear the performance, you get a different impression of what he's talking about. Maybe, right? Maybe the performance seeds like more. This is the way we treat people who are in those situations.
Right.
That's where I'm trying to get to, right? It was, I'm like, because if you just look at the lyrics, you're like, oh my God, this is this is heavy, this subject matter. And what is he saying? Like, does he mean what he says? But then in the context of the song, of the vocal performance, it completely changes the context of the lyrics. It needs that, like, it needs that, you know, that sarcastic, that or sardonic even delivery. You know, otherwise it doesn't work. The message of the song doesn't work. And I mean, it's nothing he lets go of. The entire album is that performance, right?
Sure.
You know, it's like, it's always to use some UK colloquialisms. It's always taking the piss, always. Right.
In it.
It's funny because I find that listening to him, he's easier to understand when he's enunciating his lyrics than some artists that we've covered on the show. But I still didn't really pay attention to what he was saying.
Well,
maybe that's on me. That's totally on me.
I'll give you the breakdown. Basically, fuck everything that's come before. We reject it all. It was all empty, broken promises and lies. And now we have no future. And we're still worshiping some fucking archaic monarchy when we should be really worried about, you know, what we've left for future generations. And because we're young, the only way we're going to be able to deal with the situation we're in is by taking the piss out of everything and just leaning into anarchy and nihilism, but doing it with exuberance.
Yeah, yeah, basically that. And also, fuck David Johansen and fuck EMI.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the song submission is just a funny thing about how Malcolm McLaren, because he was into, you know, kinky bondage, told them that they should write a song about submission. And so they broke the word down and were like, oh, is he talking about going on a mission on a submarine?
Going on a submission, a submarine mission. I love that. That's something I did not pick up until this listen through.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing, is there's humor to this album. There's humor on this album, right? Like, it's taking the piss, like I said. And I think that's one thing that these guys were really good at, and I think that sometimes was lacking in later versions of punk rock. Maybe not always. Like, I would say it came back maybe in the late 80s and the 90s. Like, a lot of the California bands, like, remembered to, like, oh, yeah, right, have fun. Mm-hmm. Have a message, have something to say, but have fun. But yeah, these guys were like, they, you know, that's a part of their message too. Is like, don't take yourself so goddamn seriously.
Yeah.
Right. Like, they were really about that. Yeah. So, I don't know. The other thing I was going to ask you, Naomi, though, is would you take his vocals over Neil Young?
Wow. What a question. Oh, fuck. I hate them both. Oh, I don't.
You have to pick one, though. This or that.
Okay. Desert Island. And the ship is sinking.
Torture.
And you have to take one with you. Not because you want to, but because you're like, if I don't have anything with me, I'll go crazy. So
the tone of Sid's voice, or sorry, not Sid, Johnny's voice is easier for me to listen to. If I could take out all of his like screamings and yellings and weird noises, then I'd probably pick Johnny.
Yeah, you know, I don't.
Wow.
If I turn that question on myself, I might take Johnny Rotten over Neil Young.
Well, I know I would, but that's just because I like this album. I like Sex Pistols more than I like him. So,
Well, right now, we're recording this in February 2022.
Well, I'm not even with all that public stuff that just happened.
Neil Young's
just
making a lot of noise in the news right now, and I don't know about you guys, but I'm like, all right. I don't like, yeah. Anyway, whatever. I'm just like Neil.
I like some of his older, some of his songs for sure, but I think I like Sex Pistols a little bit more.
I might be in the same boat. I might be, if I had like no other choice. You know, in a perfect world, there's room enough for everybody, and they all have their place.
Oh yeah,
and I've got
no disrespect. Even though I sit here and whine about how much I dislike this, it's just my opinion. I respect that everybody else likes it, or whoever. Yeah,
for sure,
it.
For sure, Brett. But on that sinking ship, and I have to save a record, not the person.
Okay,
I think in real life I'd probably still, because I think Johnny Rotten is still, you know, I think he's still annoying. You know, to this day, he's still a brat. You know, I think he was just recently, he was like a Trump supporter. You know?
Oh, for fuck's sake.
And I think he's more coming from it as like, he's still in his head. He's still that 17-year-old, like, you know, like snot nosed fucking, like, whatever subversive is cool. So everybody, whatever, you know, and I don't get it. Like, the same guy who probably was like, you know, fuck Margaret Thatcher is now with Trump. But then again, I don't understand his politics. At least Neil Young, you know, is somebody you could like probably just chill out with a little bit. But in the case of the music, if I had to like, is it Harvest or is it Nevermind the Bollocks? I think I'm going to pick Nevermind the Bollocks. I think.
I know it's a bad thing when it's coming down to which annoys me less.
Well, listen, I know we're not going to win you over necessarily on the punk rock, and that's...
Oh, no, that's fine.
Fine. It's good. We need these, you know, could you imagine if these episodes were just nothing but everybody going like, it's great, it's the best thing ever, like, and there's no
boring.
Pushback.
Boring.
You know, yeah. Somebody,
boring.
Listen, there's somebody who's listening to this right now being like, I've never liked that record. I've always hated the Sex Pistols. And... you know, they hear your voice and they go, thank you.
That's right.
Thank you. So I say salute to that person. You got Naomi's on your team. Mm-hmm. But
it's just it's nice because it's like it's a chance for me to open my mind to something and then make an informed decision. Yes, an informed decision on whether I like it or not, and then fuck it again. Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I don't really like steamed green beans. You know, I just something about the tinny taste of those of fucking green beans. And every once in a while, they show up on my dinner plate because, you know, somebody was like, oh, I'll steam some green beans for you. And I'm like, I don't know. Well, I'll eat a few. And I eat them and they go down and I go, yeah, I still don't really like green beans.
Mm-hmm. Is that a true analogy?
Yes. Who likes green beans?
Me, I love green beans.
Green beans are great. I don't
know. Good when they're like covered in other stuff.
I don't know what this tinny thing is you're talking about.
Pinch of salt and a little bit of butter, but that's it. Not like,
yeah, but that's what you flat. Like. You like the butter and the salt. You don't like.
No, I like the combination. The salt just brings out the flavor.
No, you're wrong.
I'm not dumping Lord, salt on it.
Yes, just like, Lord just Charlie, like you are correct.
Yeah, anyway, so you know, I get it. Maybe. I'm just saying, maybe, you know, the Sex Pistols and punk rock in general are your green beans. All right. Well,
yeah.
I don't know if you guys have anything else to put in here, whatever, but if you do, speak now or forever hold your peace.
I learned a lot today. I learned something.
Okay.
That is all.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I don't know how accurate it is, but I just for its dramatic, you know, nature, what a, mm-hmm. It's a good movie. Got great performances from, who plays Sid Vicious? What's his face? Come on. Gary Oldman.
Okay.
Gary Oldman plays Sid Vicious. Just proving that he is a fucking chameleon because he's Sid Vicious. He's the bad guy from Fifth Element. He's Commissioner Gordon. Just give him any role and he just
anything he can
morphs
do.
Into it. Yeah.
And the answer is no.
But enough about Gary Oldman. What did Rolling Stone have to say about
Would you say Rolling Stone?
Well, they said this at number 80 on their greatest albums of all time. If the Sessions had gone the way I wanted, it would have been unlistenable for most people, Johnny Rotten said. I guess it's the very nature of music. If you want people to listen, you're going to have to compromise. But few heard it that way at the time. The Pistols' only studio album sounds like a rejection of everything rock and roll and the world itself had to offer. True, the music was less shocking than Rotten himself, who sang about abortions, anarchy, and hatred on bodies and anarchy in the UK. But Never Mind the Bollocks is the Sermon on the Mount of UK punk, and its echoes are everywhere. Yeah, I would more or less agree with that. Like I said, I think of this more now as an event or, you know, a historical document, a time and place. Like it's a perfect time capsule of what was happening. And, you know, I understand why this band collapsed. I mean, on top of the fact that they didn't like each other,
right?
They were forced to be in together. And it turns out when you have these strong personalities, they kind of clash. And then, of course, Sid Vicious, obviously, that fell apart pretty quick. So there are subsequent Sex Pistols albums, but they're cleverly titled like The Great Rock and Roll Swindle, because that was Malcolm McLaren being like, oh, I have these demos of them playing like covers of like 50s and 60s songs. And then also they did get Sid Vicious, because he was such a breakout star on his own, into the studio for his version of My Way.
Which is brilliant if you've never heard it.
Super fucking brilliant, yeah. But
it's,
and then,
it's good to it's because that was a movie as well, right? Greatest Rock and Roll Swindle.
Oh yeah,
a film, which was the first way that I saw it would have been through like the movie itself. So that's another if you want to have a Friday night movie night, just do Sid and Nancy backed with The Greatest Rock and Roll Swindle. You're gonna have a punk rock Friday.
Punk rock Friday.
Yeah.
Charlie, where was this in previous versions?
Previously, in 2012, it was actually number 41.
Oh, way up.
So it dropped about 40 spots. Ooh, and
that's a huge fall.
Number 80 in 2012, which, you know, took over now, would be John Lennon's Imagine.
So I imagine we're still going to run into John Lennon's Imagine at some point on this list.
I like to draw comparisons from things that like take over other places on here, but I don't really see much of a comparison on this one. Sometimes it's like, oh, it's interesting that this, you know, whatever album is taking over this spot. But this time it's just like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's interesting for sure, because where this album is on the list now, it's actually stuck between two pop records. So, but before we get to that, I was going to ask you guys, does it deserve its ranking?
Well, I'll say yes. I think it absolutely does. Not only for all the reasons that we talked about with being like, you know, in the time and place and like a snapshot of exactly what was happening, but its legacy and part of its legacy, which we didn't really touch on. I guess we sort of did in a way, talking about Courtney Love, but Kurt Cobain was a huge fan. And you can see that it was a huge fan, both in partially the sound that he went with that, you know, that they had for Nirvana, but also Nirvana's second album, Nevermind, which was Sex Pistols inspired.
Production wise, for sure.
Mm-hmm. But even just right there in the name, in the title alone, Nevermind.
That's a good point. Yeah. That's yeah. I guess when I think about Kurt Cobain, I think about like a lot of the bands that he referenced more publicly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, Kurt Cobain didn't think of himself as a grunge star or whatever.
No way.
I don't know. That's a thing. But
a grunge star.
But even Courtney Love, you know, to this day, she'll be like, it's punk rock. Okay. That's what we called it. We called it punk rock. We played punk music. So.
Hmm.
So yeah, what about you, Naomi? Do you think it deserves its ranking?
I think anything that has that much influence over a generation or has that much influence over so many people who are inspired musically, like Cobain and whatnot, is very, very deserving of that spot. And I think that it meant a lot to the genre of punk. So yeah, of course it does.
Yeah, I think this is still a lot of people's reference for what punk rock is, right? Like, I'd say to your average person that, you know, if they're not all that adept about, you know, music or history of music or whatever, but if you, you know, they have an idea of punk, it's going to be kind of one or two things, right? It's going to be either the Sex Pistols in the UK or maybe the Ramones in New York. Yeah, I would say...
Before you say that, I'm just the very fact that I've heard of them, I know about them, but I know nothing about that genre tells you that it deserves to be there, right?
Right.
Right.
Transcends the genre.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I think that if we're making a list of important albums, you know, the legacy and all that stuff that you know matters, this is one of them for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So yeah, 100%. So the other question is, is it going in your collection?
Hell no.
I knew you were a no.
Let's just get that out of the way.
Charlie, what about you?
I could have told you what our answers would have been, but I'm absolutely.
Yeah, me too. I think actually I now listening to it now, I'm like, it's actually a shame I don't have a copy of this. I don't think I ever owned it on CD either. Like it just, you know, I was like, yeah, that's like I said earlier. I was like, yeah, that's that thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's good for them. But now I'm like, oh, this is probably more important than I really gave it credit. You know, I gave it credit, but I didn't give it enough credit. And now I kind of want to have it just to be like, yeah, one day, you know, somebody, maybe the kid is going to be asking me about music and I'm going to be like, oh, we got to put this one on because you got to know about this.
That's right.
I'm going to be that junior high student teacher for, you know, I'm going to make that mixtape. It's got to have fucking Misfits. It's got to have Sex Pistols. It's got to have the Ramones.
Sure.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So, okay, cool. So we know all about that. Okay, guys, thanks for hanging out with us today. That was the Sex Pistols. Of course, we have a website. If you would like to follow us on all the social medias, or get a hold of us or do whatever you want to do, you know, just let us know. Charlie, what is that website?
Oh, I'll tell you that website. It's L2LPodcast.com.
Oh, yeah.
Right on, right on, right on. And yeah, if you want to maybe reach out and leave us a message, we've been playing some of them at the end of the show. We'd like to play more, but you got to have an opinion. You got to tell us what your opinion is. So you got a phone number you want to tell people where they can call us, Naomi?
They can give us a call at 780-851-8785.
That's right. And it doesn't have to be about this episode. It could be any episode. Oh, somebody calling right now. Better pick up. Better pick up. Okay. Also, you guys got your own things going on that maybe you want to tell the world about. Let them know what you're doing. Charlie, what you got going on?
Oh, just come on down to oldmandesign.com. We got all sorts of t-shirts and merch. You can help support this podcast or another podcast of mine or another podcast of mine or some other stuff that I do. Just come on down to oldmandesign.com. We'll get you sorted.
Right on. And Naomi, what's going on in your world?
I have a podcast called Dope Nostalgia, where we talk to people from the 90s who had big hits. And I think the week we're doing this one, I'm talking to Kevin Martin, the lead singer of Candlebox.
Oh, I kind of remember them.
Okay. Yeah,
kind of. Maybe I'll listen to the episode and then I'll totally remember them. Okay, guys. And patreon.com/learningtolisten. If you can help us out, please. We'd really appreciate it. And listen, we're not going to, you know, give you nothing in return. In return, we got episodes going up early. All the archived episodes are going up there, you know, weekly. So you can look for those. And plus, you know, extra bonus content on every episode. Today, we did about roughly 30 minutes of extra stuff. So there's only one place you can get that. And that is at patreon.com/learningtolisten. Okay. Thank you once again for listening. Thanks for hanging out with us today. We really appreciate it. Like I said, make sure you like and subscribe everywhere you can. What we're doing next week? Well, we've done another, in this case, we've done like 9-ish episodes, but we've hit another milestone. So there's going to be another recap. We've got to do that. Just catch up. That'll be a short episode. So, you know, hang tight. There'll be another one right after that for Frank Ocean's 2016 album, Blonde. So we're getting back into the pop and R&B world real quick after the punk rock. Interesting.
This is DePoto in the punk rock.
Okay, but to take it home, I like the Today Show producers yelled at Bill Grundy when he interviewed the Sex Pistols. Wrap it up! All right, I'm out of here. I gotta go.
Me too. I got a job. Shit.
Me too. I got one of my regular job and shit.
The 1990s. The music was fun.
Yeah.
And then it got really dark for a while, a little bit anti-establishment.
But the next thing you knew, it was totally fun again.
So many artists came and went and left us wondering, what are they doing now? This podcast isn't about the heavy hitters who are still making millions. It's about everyone else, the ones whose careers didn't really leave that decade and kind of just still live in our memory.
So you mean Vanilla Ice had another song?
We all know what happened to Marky Mark. But what about the Funky Bunch? Who were the KLF? And why did Tammy Wynette record a song with an electro dance band that topped the charts? Two genres that specifically defined the 90s. What were freestyle and new jack swing all about? Did you know that Blossom star Joey Lawrence had a huge pop hit? Or that Alanis Morissette had a really hot pop career in Canada before Jagged Little Pill? Special guests will also be joining me to discuss the great era of glitter, grunge, thin eyebrows, hammer pants, and total ridiculousness. We're even setting up some interviews with some of the musicians that define the times.
Okay, so if you're older than 30, you might be sitting here going, man, I totally remember that song, but I have no idea who does that. Well, then you better listen and find out.
I'm Naomi Carmack, host of the ultimate 90s podcast, Dope Nostalgia. You're going to be busting the move again, coming in early 2020. You want to follow us so that you know when we go live? Check out our Twitter at NostalgiaDope. Or you can find us on Instagram at dope_nostalgia. If you've got a question or you just want to be on the show, email us at dopenostalgiapodcast@gmail.com.